It's 9:06. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network. Well, the Federal Communications Commission has taken up the question of net neutrality. Meanwhile, in the Senate, Senator John McCain has introduced legislation that would prevent the FCC from making any rules regarding Internet service. So what is this all about? What is net neutrality? According to Wikipedia, at its simplest, network neutrality is the principle that all Internet traffic should be treated equally. Well, what does that mean? This morning, we're going to talk about net neutrality, the pros and cons, and we'll welcome your thoughts as well. Here is how to get in touch with us. The phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. My guest this hour is Robert Atkinson, president and founder of the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation. Robert Atkinson, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, when I first heard about net neutrality, and this is some time ago, I kind of wondered what the debate was about. I mean, the idea of treating all Internet traffic equally just sort of seems like common sense, but the issue is a lot more complicated than that, isn't it?
It does seem like common sense. You would want all Internet traffic treated equally, except perhaps when someone sends you when there's a clear someone who's sending out packets that have viruses in them. You would want your Internet service provider to not treat that the same as a good packet. You'd want them to actually interdict it and stop viruses from coming into your machine. So that's just a simple case there where clearly there are exceptions to this generalized principle of all packets being treated equally. And then, as you said, it gets a lot more complicated because then there are all these other nuances. So that's not really quite what the debate is about or should be about, I would argue.
Well, before we get into what the debate should be about, let's establish some context for this. And I admit when I ask this question, it's probably going to sound fairly silly when it comes out of my mouth, but that would be nothing new for me. How does the Internet actually work? I mean, you just used the term packets. Let's start by trying to explain at the core of what's happening in cyberspace when information goes back and forth.
That's a really great question. Starting point. So how the Internet works is essentially there are bits of information that a computer takes, and it chops them up, if you will, into these little packets, these little clumps of data. So, for example, when you talk to someone over an Internet telephone connection, what's happening, or you send an email, or you download a YouTube video, or you listen to this show, it's taking little slices of it, and then those slices get sent off, those little bits of packets, the data packets, they get sent off onto the Internet, which is essentially a set of rules about how these things should, a packet should be governed. And then they go off along these wires or wireless, and they get sent where they're supposed to go. And each packet has a little address in it. So think of it as almost like a bit of mail. Instead of sending out one letter, you're sending out 10 of them, and they all have the same address. And then when they get to where they're supposed to go, they get reassembled in the correct order. So it might be packet number one goes to Rob's machine, packet number two, packet number three. Packet number four might get there first, but it waits until packet one, two, three are there. They get reassembled, and up pops a video or an email or a voice.
But most of us don't see that. I mean, we don't pay any attention to it. All we know is now when we open up our computers and we click on the icon for our whatever Internet browser we have, for example, a web page opens up. We don't see the sausage being made, and it's probably best that we don't. But it's important that we understand how that works because that's at the heart of this whole debate, isn't it?
It is at the heart of the debate. I mean, unlike the telephone system that we're on now, telephone system now is digital, but it used to be analog. And what's called, in other words, there was just a sort of one connection. In fact, actually, that's what we have right now. We have a dedicated connection on the telephone, and we hold that whole connection. Now, the Internet works differently in the sense of there could be thousands of millions of different bits from different places all sort of interspersed on this wire, and they're all shooting along. Think of it as cars on the highway, and this one's going to get off here to go to this computer, and this one's going to get off there. So it's in that sense, it's a much more efficient network, which is one of the reasons why the Internet has grown. But the other thing about this network is it's an open network. So I can go and I can download an application from China for video, or I can go to Wisconsin and download, get an email. So it's a very open system that lets everybody participate, and that's at once its strength, and it also is at once its vulnerability.
Well, let's talk about that as its vulnerability. What's wrong with that system? What makes it vulnerable?
Well, what's important to understand about the Internet is it was actually designed by scientists for use of scientists. It was a research network. It was never designed by, it wasn't, for example, built by the telephone system to what you would call scale up for what has become an amazing global network of hundreds of millions of users every day. And the second component of that is it was really never, ever designed to be a network that would send out huge video files where you can download HD movies, for example, or it was never designed for to be a real-time network. In other words, it was designed as what's called an asynchronous network. In other words, it wasn't, you would communicate with somebody, but not in real time. So you'd send them a message, and it might get there 2 seconds later, but that's not exactly in synchronous real time. Now it's really being used for big video files, oftentimes, and it's being used for real-time things, whether it's real-time gaming or whether it's talking to somebody on a Skype telephone call. And if you have any kind of delay in that, frankly, a tenth of a second, you're not going to be able to engage in a very meaningful conversation, useful conversation. It'll sound very jittery like that. So the Internet, as we know it today, was not built to do that. And so that's where you get into this whole question of, can you manage packets? Can you make the Internet work better by giving some packets a little bit of boost or priority? And that's a lot of what the debate is about today.
Well, ultimately, isn't the debate about who gets to decide which packets get priority?
That is part of what the debate is about. There are certain people in the debate who would argue, as you alluded to in Wikipedia, that no packet should get priority. So let's just say, for example, that you're at home with your wife and your kids, and your son is downloading a movie, hopefully legally, and your wife is doing email, but you're on a telephone call on the Internet, maybe using Skype. But because your packets are sort of standing in line between the movie packets, you're not going to be able to have a very satisfying call. So then the question is, how does all that work? Can you prioritize your packets so that your packets get a little bit ahead of the movie packets? Or is that something that only the network can do? And the reality of the way that works is because these are what are called shared networks. So when you're in your home, you're sharing part of that network. You're sharing part of the pipe, if you will. And so in reality, the only way that those packets could get prioritized is for the Internet service provider to do that.
If there are 10 kids down the block who are all involved in Internet gaming, chances are my experience isn't going to be very good anyway.
Well, you got really two big questions. By the way, this part of the debate is called the network management. There are other parts of the debate, too, about blocking sites or degrading and other things. But this part is called network management. And there's another part of the debate there, which is just about, boy, those times of day, you know, when all the kids are home and they're all gaming or whatever, the network gets pretty clogged up, pretty crowded, because you really cannot build a network that's uncrowded all the time without paying a lot more money. So that's what's called a dedicated private network. Corporations have these networks, but they cost a lot of money. It'd be like thinking of going to work on the freeway, but they build 25 lanes so that there's never, ever traffic congestion. You could do that. It's really expensive to do. So the networks are designed to sort of go with most of the time work pretty well, but sometimes during the day they get congested. And then the question is, well, could ISPs manage that congestion a little bit? Maybe, for example, if you're downloading a movie, just kind of slow that down by about 30 seconds or a minute so that instead of getting the movie and, you know, downloading it in an hour, you get it in an hour and a minute. You know, is that a legitimate thing for them to do so that the people who are making phone calls on the Internet during that period of time, their experience is better? That's a big part of what the debate is about.
We're talking about net neutrality and the debate over it. It's now at the FCC, which is considering proposed rulemaking and accepting public comment on the same. This is also an issue that has come up in Congress. There are a couple of different bills, one opposed to the idea of net neutrality and one in favor of making it the law of the land. And we're wondering what you think about it. Are you a heavy computer user? Do you use the internet for making phone calls, downloading movies from whatever the source? We won't ask you to incriminate yourself, but what do you use the internet for, and how do you think this would be affected? One of the issues here is that some some providers of internet programming, like Google and Facebook, are very concerned about what they see as an attempt by the large companies that control the pipeline, that own it, to get them to pay a lot of money and make them not as competitive as they might otherwise be. And we'll be talking about all of these issues as we move forward this morning, but I'm wondering what you think. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 is the telephone number you can use to reach us, whether you're on an internet phone or a plain old telephone service phone. The email address is talk@wpr.org. As I mentioned just a moment ago, application companies like Google and Facebook are saying that an unfettered network is necessary to innovation. And on the other side, you have network providers like AT&T and Comcast arguing that any regulation will stifle innovation. As I read the various news articles and the material on your website, it sounds like both sides have an argument to make. I mean, there is really no there's no one way you can look at this and say, yes, that's absolutely true or that's absolutely false.
Well, that's certainly what we would argue. Like, for example, the point you you made about Google or Facebook or other application providers or content providers, the key there is that there really is no one has ever really proposed, and if anyone ever, if an ISP, internet service provider, or broadband provider ever did this, it would be they would be in trouble so quickly. But the idea that they would somehow say to Google, if you want to have a search on somebody's machine, you actually have to pay access to do that, that's not ever going to happen. That's what's called the best efforts internet. So the best efforts internet is you basically send out your packets and they get there and the best effort. So sometimes that works super, super fast. Sometimes there's the delay of a few milliseconds on it. The issue there really is, let's say you're a company, let's say you're a gaming company. You have a interactive game and you want to be able to give your gaming customers a really good experience. I actually use a better example. Let's say you're a telemedicine site, and you want to be able to make sure that when the doctor views your thing through a webcam and talks to you, that you want to have excellent high fidelity imaging and no delay on the voice, and you're willing to pay just a little bit more for that to get a high guaranteed quality of service from the internet provider. Should that be allowed or shouldn't it be allowed? The first part, where a company would say, no, you cannot access it at all unless you pay, that clearly should not be allowed and is not allowed now. The other question, though, is could you pay to get a little bit better service to the customer? That's really the question that's in debate right now.
800-486-8655, talk@wpr.org. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll see if anybody wants to join us and discuss this issue. We're talking about net neutrality today and trying to get a handle on exactly what that is and what it means, and do we need to make changes in the way the internet is regulated, or don't we? And there are pretty good arguments to be made on both sides. And this isn't just an issue in the United States. It's being discussed everywhere because the internet is indeed worldwide. My guest is Robert Atkinson, president and founder of Information Technology and Innovation Foundation. We'll be right back. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 21 minutes after 9 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. Here's what's coming up a little bit later on the Ideas Network. After 1 o'clock on Talk of the Nation, in California, a 15-year-old girl was brutally assaulted for 2 hours outside a homecoming dance as up to 20 people watched. After one on Talk of the Nation examining bystander behavior, from jeering participant to silent objector. That's coming up on Talk of the Nation this afternoon after 1 o'clock here on the Ideas Network. This hour we're talking about net neutrality. And my guest is Robert Atkinson, president and founder of the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation. We have callers who want to join us, and I want to get to them in just a moment. But first, Mr. Atkinson, I'd like you to give us the address of your website, because you've got a number of reports and documents there that I think would help most people understand this issue a lot better.
Sure, John. It's www.itif.org.
ITIF.org. Okay, we've got that, and I've got a note to remind myself to ask you to give us that again before the end of the program. We have callers on the line, and let's start with a call from Sam in Madison. Good morning, Sam. Sam, hello. Okay, we're not hearing Sam. Sam, please try to call back. We'll try and get you on. We'll go to David in Mountain. Hello, David.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I would like him to comment on two things. Is like ISPs throttling back your bandwidth if you're using too much bandwidth, and also how come they aren't required to give you the bandwidth that you're paying for? You know, where they say, oh, we have DSL at 10 point whatever, and you only get, you know, 2 to 5, you know, so you're really not getting what you're paying for.
Sure. Those are great questions. Let me start with the last one first. The one of the things I think the FCC hopefully will do is to come up with some clearer rules about advertising on bandwidth. It's not as if they're the problem, as I alluded to before, is this notion of a best efforts internet. So if you want to buy a dedicated ISP service where you'd say, you know, I want 10 megabits and I always want it no matter whether it's the, you know, most congested time of the day or in the middle of the night, you can get that. It's just going to cost you more. And the reason it costs more is it just costs more to provide that dedicated service. So what they give is a best effort service, and it's sort of usually kind of, if they say, you know, 10 megs, it's sort of up to 10 megs, assuming that the network's not crowded and all that. And sometimes it's a lot less if the network is crowded, and that's obviously pretty frustrating. So there needs to be a little bit more clarity and openness about advertising so that consumers know that if they're advertising 10, that they may not get that a lot of the time. You know, the other big problem with this, too, is it's hard to know where the bottlenecks are sometimes. So you can download something, and it, boy, this has taken forever, but it may not be on your ISP's part of the network. Once you kind of go to your ISP, then they go out on what's called the public internet and the backbone and other places, and there are oftentimes a lot of delays out there. So it's sort of hard to know sometimes why you're not getting good service. There are things like speedtest.com, I think it is, or speedtest.net, which are very good. You can go on there, you can just do a little test, and it tells you exactly what your speed is, and that's a useful little tool. With regard to throttling, that issue really is about if you're, let's say, it turns out about 10% of the users or less consume an inordinate amount of the bandwidth. So if you're just sitting at home doing your email, and you're on a street or sharing a network in the neighborhood with some people who are downloading HD movies, you know, 3 a day, it's going to negatively affect your performance because essentially it's a shared network. So what some ISPs have tried to do is to say, at particular periods of times a day where it's really, really crowded, can they sort of slow down the movie downloads to make everybody's work a little better? And then the other piece related to that is what's called bit pricing or bit caps. If you're really a big, heavy user, should ISPs be able to say, you know what, if you're going to use a lot of bandwidth, you're going to be one of those people who downloads a lot of movies a day, you should pay more, and therefore everybody else ideally could pay a little less. That's a big part of the debate right now. My own view is that it's okay to do that for ISPs, but they need to be transparent and very clear about what they're doing so that you as a customer can know what you do. Most countries around the world, actually, now the majority of countries actually have some sort of extra charge if you're a, you know, a really, really heavy downloader, you know, the kind of 10% of the people who do that.
Well, when I win the lottery, I'm buying myself a T3. But David, if you're still with us, I wanted to ask you something about your internet service. And you probably need to turn your radio down as well. I thought I heard a little radio in the background there before. But David, are you still with us? No, I think we lost David. I'll just relate a personal experience, and I won't name the ISP except to say that it's a satellite provider, which I no longer use. But they have a policy, and they, when you sign up, they tell you about it. And their policy is if you use too much bandwidth, they just throttle you back for the rest of the month, and then at the beginning of the next month, your speed goes back to wherever it was at whatever tier you were paying for. And I always thought that was a little odd.
Well, one of the things is that satellites are a little different in the sense of they have inherently more constraints on their network. So if you have a really great cable network or fiber to the home or what's called DSL, the telephone line, you have a little bit more flexibility and capacity in terms of peak load capacity. Satellites are a little more constrained, and so what they can actually do with their networks in order to provide kind of the greatest good for the greatest number of people, it makes it harder for them to do that, which is why they sometimes engage in that. To me, the key thing there, though, is it a fair Are they doing something that's fair, that's really in the interest of most of their customers, and is it clear for the customer to know what they're getting before they sign up for service? Those are, to me, are the questions that need to be there.
Yeah, and the other thing about satellite is when you do a speed test, it doesn't measure the latency.
Yeah, and then what latency is for the listeners, latency is sort of the the amount of time, the amount of space sort of between packets, if you will. And so you can get a lot of packets coming through at the same time, which is speed, but if the delay between the packets is long, and that's really important on a phone call. You don't want a phone call with high latency because then you don't quite hear the voice right. And satellite historically has had higher latency because you've got to go out to the satellite. So you're right. Speed tests generally don't measure latency. There are tools online that you can use to measure latency, but it's a little different.
Well, let's move on. We have a bunch of people with phone calls and questions, and let's go next to Paul in Grays Lake, Illinois.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'll try to be brief. There's so much to this issue, but I would like to raise the point that some of the talk about prioritizing of flow, I find that especially that's coming from the telecommunications industry, specifically the incumbent providers, is not fully descriptive or accurate. I have concerns, for example, well, let's take a scenario. You more and more are able to access movies that you pay for legitimately through Netflix, but Comcast and other network providers are trying to roll out their own services. Now, if they also have control over what packets receive priority, they can bump up the priority of their own and limit the priority of Netflix's. They gain a competitive advantage by virtue of having control of at least a portion of the network. That also caps come into play in this regard. I mentioned Comcast. Their cap has been pretty generous so far. For most people, it's currently 250 gigabytes. But some of the other providers, for example, Time Warner, if I'm recalling correctly, down in Texas, rolled out a pilot program where, if I'm recalling correctly, the caps were in the neighborhood of 10 gigabytes for the month. Now, a couple of movies, and you've hit your cap. What happens also in this scenario, the backbone, so the main lines that you can think of as more or less running across the country, the long-distance lines, my understanding is that there's still a fair amount of capacity on those. Actually, what happened with some of the telecommunication companies that went bust, if anybody remembers WorldCom, is they invested so heavily in producing additional backbone. When that was not immediately used, they went under due to their debt obligations. But the fiber, the backbone, remains installed. Where you really run into limitations is in what's called the last mile. that's the you know, the cable TV line running to your house, or the phone line that carries the DSL signal if you have that type of service. And the trouble is that SBC, which is now named AT&T, and others have been reluctant to build out those services. And in some places, they have not even, they've refused to bring them. And one interesting story is that local municipalities have finally thrown up their hands and said, we'll issue some bonds and build it ourselves, at which point the incumbent companies often take them to court and attempt to have legislation squash their efforts. Either that, or they finally decide that they can offer service in this particular town. What many people face is that in that last mile, they don't really have competition. They may have two providers. They may only have one provider. So if they don't like the service they're getting, they don't have anywhere to go.
Okay, well, those are three important questions you raised. Let me just respond to them briefly. The first one is you raised about the Netflix and the anti-competitive issue. Would the company sort of throttle Netflix to give priority to their own movies? That's one of those issues where it's very, very clear what the right answer is, and that is you shouldn't allow anti-competitive behavior should definitely not be allowed. In other words, you shouldn't be allowed to give priority to your services at the expense of your competitor. There's been no evidence that that's happened, and it's clearly one of those things where we would want the government to step in and prevent that if it happened. Now, sort of to step up a level, one of the problems, though, with some of the legislation that's proposed is that while it would stop this sort of behavior, which is clearly wrong, you're right in raising that it should not be allowed, it would be so blunt that it would stop other things, like, for example, the ability to prioritize all voice internet traffic, regardless of who it comes from. Most people would say that's really a good thing. If my email downloads 10 seconds later, I don't really care, but I want my voice quality on the internet to be high. So one of the challenges here is to sort of be able to use a scalpel rather than a sledgehammer, to be able to allow good network management, but definitely to ban or prevent this kind of bad network management. You talked about this anti-competitive. With regard to caps, I think the issue is, you're right again on caps. The issue, I don't think, is about caps. You do need some sort of caps just because these networks are shared and they have capacity constraints. Unless we all want to pay more and we're all going to have to buy more to get a bigger network, somebody's got to pay for it. You could make, a good case that the Time Warner cap was too low. So there is an issue about, you know, what is the right size of the cap, and is it a fair cap that, you know, would sort of get most people to be under it. Your last point is really about this last mile issue. The reality is it's just very expensive to upgrade networks. AT&T has a system called U-verse, which is what's called fiber to the node, where they're putting fiber out from their central office out to these neighborhood nodes and then running the rest of it over the existing copper wire. And using that, you can get pretty good speed, sometimes 20 or 25 megabits a second. Some other companies are using fiber, particularly Verizon is using fiber to the home. The problem is that fiber to the home costs about three times more. It's very expensive to deploy. It's a great network. I have it in my house in Washington, D.C. It's wonderful, but it's very expensive to deploy. And so the real question, I think, is it's not that these companies are intentionally saying, we don't want to have a better network, we don't want to deploy that. It's that it costs a lot of money. And there's competition out there, oftentimes with cable providers. And so the economic case has to be there. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm optimistic that the federal government finally, for the first time, we've been calling for this for many years now, finally is establishing a national broadband strategy. This is being undertaken now in the FCC. They've come out with a plan in February. And hopefully they can help make that easier. One last point is one of the reasons other countries are ahead of us is because they basically had subsidies for deploying these high-cost networks. In Japan, for example, there were tax breaks for companies that wanted to deploy fiber to the home because it's very expensive to do. So we need to be creative and think about things like that here as well, I would argue.
Well, and you anticipated one of my next questions, which was, what is the situation elsewhere? But I'll follow it up with this. What about what are they? I know that the net neutrality debate is on around the world. It's certainly been talked about in the European Union. What are rules like elsewhere in the world?
Well, it's one of those issues where there aren't rules established yet anywhere else in the world that I'm aware of. It's one of those issues where policymakers are still looking at it and evaluating it, partly because it is one of those issues where there are not a lot of abuses yet. There certainly have been some. In fact, one, I believe, in Wisconsin, the sort of famous one, I hope it was Wisconsin, Madison River, was a small... Maybe it wasn't Wisconsin, maybe I'm thinking it was because of the word Madison River, but a small telephone company a few years ago decided they wanted to block people from using internet telephony like Vonage or Skype because it cut into their own telephone revenues. And this was clearly very, very bad and was stopped immediately by the FCC. So a lot of countries are still exploring this. The European Union, the European Commission is looking at this, although they appear like they're going to be a little flexible. The issue really at the end of the day is, do you want to be sort of a carte blanche regulatory restriction, kind of like Wikipedia says, which is to some extent what a bill in the House would do. Congressman Ed Markey, who's chair of the House Communications Commission, his bill would tend to do that. Or do you want to do a more kind of case-by-case basis, which is what the FCC appears to be looking at?
Here's an email from Alex, a student of nanoscience at, I think it's Chippewa Valley Technical College. He said, I heard some issue between AT&T and Skype. AT&T was disabling the use of Skype on its smartphones. You can see why they might want to protect their profits by stopping Skype use. I don't think AT&T should be able to do this, but that is part of the debate.
Well, again, that's a very good question because it raises another important issue, which is that, which we got alluded to a little bit with satellite, which is that wireless networks are inherently different in some ways than wireline networks, in part because they're just inherently bigger capacity problems on wireless. You have cells that can only take so much data, and we have bandwidth constraints there partly because we haven't done as good a job in this country as freeing up radio spectrum, in other words, over-the-air spectrum to use for data and broadband. So wireless is a little different, and I think we've got to approach wireless differently, but that's not to say that we should allow certain kinds of discrimination there either. The AT&T case with Skype, I believe they did allow that after all. I could be wrong on that, but I thought there was an agreement on that. The issue with any sort of wireless debate, though, on these things is partly about discrimination. You know, do you want to have a competitor like Skype on that? And it's also a technical issue. Do these things, do they work? Does it overload the network? So that makes the wireless debate just a little bit more complicated in terms of what's the right answer on these things.
Well, let's take another phone call. This time it'll be Alex in Eau Claire. Alex, good morning.
Oh, I see you guys got my email.
Oh, that was you. Okay.
Oh, yes. Now, a different topic at hand for me. I'm an avid internet gamer, so this whole net neutrality thing, I didn't know there was a side of it about prioritizing packets. I think it would be great if it could lower my latency for your internet gaming, because sometimes it gets so high it's unplayable. But then I'm also torn with this whole, because I really do believe it should be free for everybody, but I think it would be pretty cool if it could improve my internet gaming.
Yeah, no, that's a great point because you raise a point, which is for a lot of people who don't use latency sensitive applications, they're not really all that aware of it. But when you start doing gaming or you want to do Skype video or things like that, then latency matters a lot. So the question would be, I don't know what gaming apps you use, but let's just say hypothetically that your gaming company went to your ISP and said, you know what, we're willing to pay you, the ISP, 25 cents a month or some modest amount of money per customer to prioritize these packets on the gaming application. so that your experience, I think you said your name is Alex, so Alex's experience is a seamless one, so there's not, you know, really bad latencies, almost, so the game is not almost, you know, becomes unplayable. What's wrong with that? I guess that would be the question. Who gets hurt by doing that? The question there in our mind is, if they're going to do that for one company, what we've said publicly is that they need to do it for all similar companies. So they couldn't, for example, pick a favorite gaming company and cut a deal with them, and then maybe other gaming companies have a worse service. But assuming that it's open to everybody, I don't know who gets hurt by that. The other customers who aren't gamers don't get hurt. The ISP gets a little bit more money so they can afford now to put more fiber out into the network. Again, it seems to me if that's done in a pro-competitive way, that's really good for everybody, particularly consumers.
We need to take a break, and when we come back, we have more people who want to join us by phone. We have a couple of email questions we need to take up, and there's room for you to get in. A little bit more bandwidth open in the Wisconsin Public Radio Pipeline. 800-486-8655 is the number to call. 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9:43. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Next hour, I'll be joined by the reporter who broke the story that the Defense Department, as part of the nearly $800 billion stimulus package, awarded nearly $30 million in contracts to companies under criminal investigation. We'll take a look at how and why those contracts were awarded. Net neutrality is the topic this hour, and my guest is Robert Atkinson, president and founder of the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation. He joins me by phone, as does Thomas in Kenosha. Thomas, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thank you. A lot of great comments from a lot of great people. I had two issues that I kind of wanted to touch on. The first one is I would like to see like a truth in advertising about bandwidth. Most people don't understand it. I mean, when you buy internet, you know, they say 3 gig, you know, but what they don't tell you is that's from the central office to your house. That's not on a backbone. If you get that on a backbone for the cheap price, everybody's buying it. The second issue is, I think, for people that that you know want prioritization, a lot of the routers, like the cheap routers you get Best Buy anywhere else, a lot of them have QoS installed. So you could do prioritization, but on your internal network, and maybe if the FCC would work with the ISPs, you know, where they could say, if we're picking up QoS from somebody's router coming through our network, obviously this person wants prioritization on this, like Skype or a game or something else, and you could cut down latency. Oh, I get latency like crazy when my girlfriend is watching Netflix and I'm trying to play like Warcraft or something, you know?
Yep. Well, to your point about the backbone, the problem is that the ISPs, it's sort of like an airline saying, we'll get you from Milwaukee to New York in 2 hours, but they only control an hour of that flight. Then you have to go jump on somebody's airplane. So it's really hard for them to, if that were the case, it's hard for them to predict exactly when you're going to get there. And it's a little bit like that. The ISPs don't control the backbone. Some of them have their own backbone, but a lot of packets, they just go off into other companies' backbone. So that's one of the reasons why this whole speed question is so difficult. All they can really control is the speed between the home and their, essentially where they plug into the backbone. And that's, so you're right, the speed question, again, we heard that earlier. It's one where I think we need more transparency, but what are the actual likely average speeds a customer is going to be getting? That's really the kind of information most customers need. With regard to prioritization, and, you know, routers have the ability to do that. Can you prioritize your own packets? My understanding, though, is that it doesn't really work that way on a shared network where you would have, you could essentially have packet conflict, because what happens if somebody says, I want to prioritize my P2P packets and a peer-to-peer packets coming on a movie, and it conflicts with prioritizing packets that are done on, let's say, a telephone call or a gaming. So prioritization really only works if it's done by the ISP. And again, there, my view would be that it needs to be prioritization that's pro-consumer and clearly in the consumer's interest.
Thanks thanks for that call, Thomas. I probably should have asked this earlier, but I want to get this in now. What is the end-to-end principle?
Well, that's a great question. There's actually a report that ITIF fellow Richard Bennett has written. Richard is actually a network engineer, designed a number of the original protocols in the Internet, and he's based out in Silicon Valley. And so if you go to our website, ITIF.org, there's a whole report on the end-to-end principle. What the end-to-end principle is it's a notion that some have used to argue that the Internet is a network where packets are treated the same throughout the entire network, and it's sort of the end-to-end, so the beginning of where a packet enters the network, say somebody's machine, all the way to where the packet leaves the network, coming on someone else's machine. What Richard makes the argument in his paper, which is really tracing out the history of the end-to-end principle, and it's a great paper if you want to know how the Internet was actually built and who built it, what was the role of the French researchers in it, and the role of DARPA, and all of these MIT, and all, it's a very interesting paper, is that the end-to-end, the Internet was never, the engineers who built the Internet never ever thought about it as essentially what's called a dumb pipe. In other words, a pipe that all it does is it takes packets from one side and moves them to the other side. It was always designed in the mind of the engineers who were building it as a network that had to continually evolve and get better and manage things. And that's what I find frustrating in the debate in Washington, is it's really been forced to be this debate about either or. You have innovation and evolution at the edge of the network, at the applications and the content, or is it at the core, or is it both? And our view is it has to be both. You have to have innovation at the network side and innovation at the application side, the edge.
Here's an email we got. It says, if the guest could comment on the idea of giving the ISPs more control over the traffic and how that would be balanced with what the ISP feels is benign and delayable or fairly throttled traffic versus the situation that arose in Iran when Twitter and other seemingly benign and pointless Internet traffic became critical to getting news and information out to the world and between people in dire situations. They go on to say, ultimately, I support net neutrality and the idea of a dumb pipe where the traffic flows as it flows, and like the highway analogy that was given by the guest, it won't always be perfect, but we are constantly studying highway design and traffic flow to create a better highway, and there's no reason that ISPs can't improve either.
Well, good question. The Twitter point is goes to a sort of a third component of the net neutrality debate, which is outright blocking or degrading. In other words, could an ISP just say, you know what, our customers are not going to be able to get Twitter feeds or these particular kinds of Twitter feeds or being able to access this particular Internet address content or web page? Clearly that is wrong, unless it's an illegal site where the government says we're going to block this, like, for example, criminal sites or sites that are clearly just virus sites. Clearly, that sort of thing is wrong. Companies generally haven't done it, with the exception, as I said, of Madison River. And there are provisions in place that would prevent that in rules. So that's one step. The other issue then is about this issue about, you know, prioritizing certain things, and who gets to decide? The issue there really, I think, is to use the highway analogy, is one of the things we do on highways is we actually prioritize. In other words, ambulances and fire trucks, they get to go first, and they have noise and they have lights, and they say, okay, well, we're a packet on the highway, we get to go first, because we all as a society say, you know what, we want our ambulances and our fire trucks to get there really, really fast. We're willing to prioritize. The question is the same, really, on the Internet, but the question there is who gets to decide that, and is it transparent and open? And there I think it's one of those things where the FCC has to have oversight and make sure that companies that are doing that, prioritizing certain kinds of streams, like the other thing, by the way, I would strongly, strongly argue is that any kind of prioritization has to be what's called protocol agnostic. In other words, and certainly not message specific. It can't be we're going to prioritize certain types of messages, or it has to be we're going to prioritize certain kinds of packets that have certain characteristics, like packets that have high latency problems. So that just needs to be overseen by the FCC to make sure that it's done fairly and in the interest of consumers. If we can do that, then I think we have the best of all possible worlds.
Let's take a call from Jennifer in Elkhart Lake next. Jennifer, good morning.
Hi, good morning. You know, the one thing that bothers me most about net neutrality is that the ISP folks are coming to the consumer once again asking for more money for the same service, and they haven't even finished the job that we've been paying tax dollars and additional fees on our phone bills for years. You what about the rural areas that have no service ever? I love broadband.
Oh, Jennifer, I think you're on a cell phone and you're breaking up, but you've got a great point to make. I think if you try calling back, maybe you'll get a better cell. What about the idea that we need to finish one job before we start another, and the telcos haven't done a very good job of finishing what they started earlier?
Well, I'm not sure I heard all of that. It sounded to me like something along the lines of the taxes that one pays on the bill, and we haven't gotten broadband to rural areas because of that. This is actually a problem. We all pay on our telephone bills what's called USF, or Universal Service Fees, and it's to subsidize and support deployment of telephone service in high-cost areas, so more remote or rural areas where there's low population densities, and it just costs more to put a network there. Right now, it is not legal for companies to use those monies to build broadband networks, strange as that may seem. And that's one of the things we've argued for a number of years, and I believe the FCC will change that very, very quickly once their broadband plan comes out. So most ISPs who want to build a rural network, and it's very expensive to do that in a lot of places, they can't get this government money. It goes to the just to provide telephone service. So that's one of the things that we could change as in the government. I think we will change it. I think the government will change it very, very quickly, and then we'll be able to see more rural deployment. The other thing that's important to note also is Congress allocated $7.2 billion in the stimulus to get networks out into rural areas, and those awards should be beginning to be announced close to the end of this year, if not a little sooner.
And as someone who lives in a rural area where DSL is not available in your choice of satellite or dial-up, and having had a very unhappy experience with satellite, which left me with a dish on my roof that I now own, and a decision to go back to dial-up because the price was so much different that the difference in speed wasn't worth it. It looks to me like the telephone companies for rural areas are leaning toward, well, satellite's the answer because we don't want to pay to build DSL out there.
Well, again, a couple of things on that. One, satellite is not as good sometimes as a higher speed network, but the nice thing about satellite is there's a whole new next generation satellite system that's being deployed, I believe, next year. And that will get much higher speeds on satellite than we've had before. And so sort of the high-tier satellite speeds that you may have been having to pay $80 for, those will now come down in price to what you're paying for the low speeds. And so satellite's going to get better. In fact, all the networks get better. Cable are getting better with what's called DOCSIS 3, which is a very, very high-speed network. So these networks do evolve, and they get better. Your point about should the rural companies build this? Again, though, if you're a company, let's say you're a small telephone company, you have to make money. You can't lose money, and building these networks can be very, very expensive. And the other problem in rural areas is that rural customers tend to subscribe less to broadband than urban customers. And so, you build a network, and you might only get 20 or 30% of the potential customers to sign on and pay for the network. So I think it's not simply that companies are being recalcitrant. It's that they need a business case to do that. That's our whole argument, that in those areas, that's why you need a public-private partnership. That's why you have to have some kind of subsidy to do that. This is, by the way, what the Swedish government did 8 years ago. In Sweden, there are fewer than 30,000 homes in Sweden that don't have wired broadband. And another 99% plus homes in Sweden have wired broadband. But to do that, they invested what we would have had to invest about $30 billion to help the companies invest in that on a per capita basis. So it takes money, it takes time, it takes commitment, and frankly, up until now, we haven't been willing to do it.
We have less than a minute to go, and probably shouldn't bring this up now, but what would your recommendation be, both, well, let's start, what would your recommendation be to Congress in terms of what they ought to do on the net neutrality question?
I would ask Congress to basically do nothing and do oversight. I think this is an area that is much, that it really is in the hands of the FCC. They're the expert agency that has the people and the knowledge and the expertise to look at this and oversee it and do the right thing. So I think it's really something the FCC needs to do. They need to make sure that they have the authority legally to go after cases where there are anti-competitive or anti-consumer action, but at the same time allow pro-competitive and pro-consumer action to occur as well. This notion of we're going to have no government involvement or we'll have total net neutrality, I think, is really a false choice, and either of those choices isn't going to give us the answer that we need as consumers.
I want to thank you for the time you spent with us today. And again, your website is itif.org, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you very much. Robert Atkinson, president and founder of the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation, joined us by phone.
Thank you.
Plain old telephone service.
Exactly.
Gotta love it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This program was produced very ably, as usual, by Robert Schrader, and it was also produced by Rhonda Fanning, who helped out with the on-air stuff. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Stick around. We're going to have more talk coming up after the news. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.